There was no water. We sheltered in the twisted ruins of what might have once been a tallish building, one side of it black and flash-fried from the blast centuries ago. Eve propped her back against the wall and peered out onto the wasteland of Vegas.
You hurt?
I shook my head, struggling to bring my own lungs under control. When I could talk, I still kept breathing, savoring the feel of air in my lungs. It was hellishly hot even in the shade, an oppression helped along by the thought that thousands had died and crumbled to dust in these very buildings.
You're bleeding. My apologies.
Fine, thin stripes of black demon blood on her own strange face glistened before they soaked back into golden skin.
So were you.
I braced my back against the wall and cast around, calculating fire angles.
Didn't know you had a grenade.
Necessity being the mother of invention. I couldn't warn you either.
Understood.
I couldn't afford to let the eldest chain me, or take the chance he might—
Understood. Eve. I wouldn't trust him either if I was you.
The scar on my shoulder throbbed angrily, another bolt of pure power flushing down to my bones and spreading outward.
So, what's the plan?
The best I can come up with is not very good.
She slid down to sit cross-legged, scooching herself between a shattered chunk of concrete and something that might have once been a couch covered in faded, tattered plaid. Shards of silica glass littered the building.
He is due to arrive at dusk. We can either run and search for another opportunity to kill him, or take our chance now. Without allies. Unless your fallen decides, as I hope he will, that covering your attempt is the best way to keep you alive.
I tipped my chin down toward the scar.
I'm not exactly inconspicuous. He's gonna come looking for me.
Dusk approaches. Won't be long, and we are not the only danger here. Listen.
I did.
Oh.
I breathed in, tasting the air.
Dust. Dry, rotting things, decay, and a faint odor of long-ago violence.
And threading under that, a faint, well-traveled hint of burning cinnamon and musk.
This is not a human place. Even when it was a city, it wasn't a human place. Since the catastrophe here, a door to hell has remained open. He will use it, if he has not already, either to issue forth from hell or to return once he has won. At least, that is what he thinks.
Her eyes glittered, her mouth twisting. She seemed not to notice her sweater was torn to rags, the firm golden slopes of her breasts peeping out.
Okay, you and me against the devil? We're dead!
We know where he will be. And despite the eldest, I am not without allies. Hell is in revolt. We have challenged him, you and I.
Exhaustion crested, washed over me.
Eve. There's no need for the speeches. Just tell me what you want me to do.
She paused for a few of the longest seconds of my life. I watched the knife-sharp shadows, sunlight spearing through the temporary shelter of a building older than the hegemony, and still clinging, wrecked and broken, to the edges of life.
Will you kill him?
She sounded very small and very young. But that smile was neither small nor young. It was the smile of a vidpoker shark holding a full hand of wonderful about to call your bet and take your firstborn.
Or maybe just your soul. Are demons even interested in souls anymore? Now that they have all the government, sex, power, and favors humanity can come up with?
Why do you keep asking me? I'm sure as hell gonna try.
Segment Sias.
It wasn't that long until sundown, and I spent most of that time not thinking as Eve and I flitted from shadow to shadow, working along the edge of the bomb crater in the huge reflective glass pan. Purple veils of shade grew longer and longer, and once I crouched next to her in the lee of a huge pile of scrap, preserved by dry desert air, while a hellhound slid in plain view through a golden column of fading sunlight, its green eyes catching fire and heat shimmering from its pelt. The knife vibrated against my hip so hard I expected the beast to pause and look for whatever was buzzing like a wasp, but the slitherings and skitterings of demons in the ruins must have drowned it out, or at least so I hoped. My eyes, dry and heavy from the flying sand, kept welling with hot water. My shoulder pulsed with soft velvet heat. I was afraid. There was no shame in being afraid, only shame in hiding from it. I'd been afraid most of my life of one thing or another. Eve circled our destination a few times before we worked our way closer, picked our way through piles of junk and broken concrete. The sun lowered itself into the west, turning to blood, and I thought I could see the haze of radiation crawling over every sand-scoured surface. Or maybe it was just the blurring in my eyes. As the sun sank, power rose. It was coming up from somewhere close. A diseased heart in the ruins, thumping irregularly but gathering strength. One huge broken building. A massive structure that looked like it had once been a pyramid, loomed over a twisted, unrecognizable statue. I guess humanity's never lost its taste for making things huger than they need to be. A slight rise of rubble made a natural amphitheater, the mountains in the background and the edges of the blast zone spilling away, the glass fractured in crazy spiderweb patterns that reminded me of the deep, angular scorings on the altar in the city under Chumalongma. I shivered as the baking wind, redolent of sand and demon spice, breathed up into my face. I lay on my stomach and peered down into the bowl of rubble giving out onto the wastes. Eve crouched below the lip of the hill, dust grimed into her hair, turning it the color of clotted cream instead of pale platinum ice. Both of us were tattered almost beyond recognition. I pushed matted, filthy hair out of my face. My nervous system was rebelling like a chill junkie's, out on the edge of control, ready to jolt away from under me.
Breathe, Danny. Just breathe.
There, in the middle of the wreckage, something that should not be, was. The dying sun gathered itself and plunged fully below the horizon. Desert stars striking sparks as the wind veered again, the ground thrumming below. The paint of dusk bled down the vault of heaven, and as true night dropped like a curtain, because it does fall fast out here in the desert, with no street lamps to hold it back, a slim figure with a shock of golden hair melded out of nothing and took his place at the focal point. The ruined city cringed. Other shadows gave birth. The spider-like things scuttled, straining at leashes held by graceful, inhuman forms with burning eyes in shades of blue, green, and molten gold. Hellhounds, winged and flightless, snarled and jostled. Imps lolled, and the deeper shadows held eyes that had to be higher-ranking demons, not deigning to show themselves.
Anubis.
Eve crouched, tense as a violin string next to me.
Not so many of the lesser flight, and none at all of the greater.
So what? They're still fucking demons.
I spotted a way down through the rubble. An easy path.
A primrose path, Danny. Huh? Get it?
I don't suppose we have a plan.
Do you believe in fate, Dante Valentine?
Past turned into present again, looped and stuck tight, A gear wheel sliding into place.
Nothing to do but finish this now.
No, I wasn't sure whether it was a lie or the truth, but I said it. Lucifer turned in a circle. My hands shook. My entire body shook. The gaping hole in my mind struggled to open like a cancerous flower. The reality of what had been done to me, fighting to break free and douse my sanity with black water. My shields shivered. One powerful burst of fear tinting them purple-red before I controlled myself again. I found myself on my feet at the top of the slope, clearly visible in the backwash of starlight. Fudoshin cleared the sheath. I knew without looking that Eve had risen too. For a moment, my heart paused. It should have been Jaframel standing there, watching my back as I faced down the devil.
It doesn't matter. It won't matter in a few red-hot minutes.
My sword woke. Blue flame twisted along its edge, runes of the nine cannons spilling through the steel, its white-hot core singing its song of destruction. I took three steps forward, and my fingers loosed themselves from the scabbard. My left hand closed around the knife's warm wooden hilt. Lucifer slowly turned. The movement was exquisitely leisurely, light sliding down the line of his body. Gold lived, scorching in his hair, casting a glimmer around him. He tilted his head back slightly, and he caught my gaze. His face was a hollow-vid angel's, sheerly beautiful and just as completely male. The emerald set above and between his flawless, burning green eyes snapped a spark. The marvel of his mouth was set and unyielding. There were shadows under his flaming eyes, and his beauty was somehow worn, but not diminished.
The devil looks very tired.
My left cheek itched, the twisted Caduceus accreditation tattoo straining inked lines under my skin. My own emerald burned like a Lay's bone drill, spitting a tearing green spark fat as a teardrop. As his eyes met mine, I recoiled without moving. A scream tore through the blank spot in my head, the one space where my magi-trained memory mercifully failed. Lucifer paused, the silk of his simple black tunic and trousers fluttering. A hood of darkness slid over his perfect features, a psychic miasma of hate made visible. His eyes slid past me as if I was a piece of furniture, coming to rest on Eve.
Eldaramil, the Morning Star, most beloved of my consorts.
The thin white scars on my belly twitched as if something still lived in the bowl of my pelvis, a heavy, heated stone. The wall inside my head quivered, stretched, and held, my stubbornness sticking fast. I lifted the knife and stepped forward again. The hellhounds, spiders, and imps all alike crouched and stared like statues.
I shall offer you one chance, and only one, to return to your nest and await your penance.
I'm not sure what Eve would have said. She never got the chance.
Hey, Blondie! You two-faced, lying sack of demon shit. You've got business with me first.
Indeed, I do!
The first winged hellhound leapt for me. The knife jerked in my hand. Wood met demon flesh as I pitched forward, blade stuck to the hilt in the roasting hide of a hellhound. Power slammed up my arm, exploding in my left shoulder and fluorescing in the visible range. Black diamond fire burst in a perfect sphere around me, the edges of my ragged aura clearly visible under the smooth carapace of Jaframel's borrowed power. A quick twist of my wrist, muscles flexing in my forearm, breaking the suction of muscle against the blade. The finials scraped against my skin, caging my hand and protecting it as a writhe of the hellhound's flexible body almost tore the knife free. It hit the ground. I kicked the body, fine ash already spreading in capillary patterns through the glassy shifting heat of its hide. I rose from the half crouch its attack had driven me down into, scooping up Furushin as I did. The blade swept down in a curve painted with blue fire, slicing across an imp's face. Clarity spilled through me, rage sharp and bright as a new pressed credit disc. They descended on me, the lowest of the scions of hell. And the knife screamed in my hand as the world unrolled. Strings of energy under its surface showing me the path through. Demon bones crunching, and the knife sending another shock of feverish power up my arm, the sword halting in midair and slicing down, the knife's finials crunching against a hell spider's face.
This is what I was born to do!
All thought vanished. My grip on Furushin's hilt was gentle, like clasping a lover's hand. The sword responded, whipping through forms coded into the very lowest levels of my brain. Turn, flex the wrist, back foot stamping down, front foot turning out, bring the knee up, quickly don't think, kill it, drive the knife in, pull it free. It was a string of fire tied to my wrist, the knife jerking my body like a marionette's, burning all the way down to the bone, the fingers clasping tighter and tighter as the weapon took over. The last hellhound fell at my feet, veins of ash threading its flesh. The rest of them drew back, a circle of glowing eyes and heat shimmer in the darkness. The temperature had dropped, steaming sands losing the day's baking. My boots crunched on silica glass at the bottom of the hill, and I faced Lucifer over a rubble-strewn plain. Raised my eyes, the ribbon of rage widening. It flushed my body, this clear, clean fury, sweet in its single-mindedness. I knew what he had done to me. I didn't quite remember it, but I knew it as if it had happened to someone else. Some brutalized girl crouching in the corner of a bedroom, whimpering as she beat her head against the wall. The borders of her body violated, her mind no longer quite her own. The Prince of Hell's green eyes narrowed. That was all. The emerald in his forehead ran with light as sterile as the radiation crawling through the ruins. Around us, just sand, shattered buildings, and trash. Pure destruction so intense that after centuries, nothing grew here. Lucifer's hands were loose at his sides, elegant fingers relaxed. Grit-laden wind touched my cheeks, fingered my filthy hair. My heartbeat mounted behind my eyes, so quick and hard it threatened to burst through my veins.
Here I stand, Lucifer, and not all the hosts of hell shall move me.
In other words, you want Eve? Come and get her. But you're gonna have to go through me first, and I have some payback for you.
My left shoulder ran with velvet fire, and the heat was building in my arms, my legs. It pressed against the thin film of my psyche, stretched over some unknowable bulge. More lamps lit in the dark behind him. Demonic eyes, shadows resolving around slim, graceful shapes. The air crawled and ran with power. Those of the greater flight that still called the devil master gathered, just in time for the show.
I don't care.
Not all the hosts of hell are necessary, necromans.
He lifted one graceful arm and pointed at me, the claw tip at the end of his index finger lengthening.
Just one.
Furushin's tip described a precise little circle in the air before the hilt floated to the side. A natural movement settling in second guard. The knife along my left forearm sang its high-voltage song of gathering murder. Stars ran overhead, their crystalline fires not choked by city shine. Eve was still behind me at the top of the hill. I felt her attention. The gem on my cheekbone sparked, my tat running wildly under the skin. A high, sweet, itching pain. The world narrowed, shrank to a single point. Neither of us could back out now.
Gauntlet thrown down, challenge accepted. And I am about to die. Will my god take me in his arms? Or will I slide unnoticed into the well of souls I've crossed over so often?
It didn't matter.
Come on. Come and get me. If you can. If you dare.
Then he was on me. My left arm was thrown aside, his bladed fingers striking my solar plexus, robbing me of breath as shocked lungs and heart struggled to function. Furushin jabbed in, hilt used like a battering ram to strike the Prince of Hell's fair golden face. Snapped his head back and he was flung down. I stumbled back, digging in my left heel to regain my balance, nausea rising and my bruised torso seizing up, cramping. Nausea retreated as he flowed to his feet. A single dot of black blood welled at the corner of his mouth. I dropped into position as he lifted the back of one golden hand to touch his lips. Furushin described a bigger circle this time.
I remember.
You remember how I screamed when you put that thing in me? How you sliced me open like I was a soda float can? And how you laughed when I screamed. I remember what you said, and how you really seemed to enjoy yourself. I remember how you sent me out to betray my daughter and my lover.
What do you think you remember? Where were you when I made your kind? Where were you when I made your world?
He drew himself up and pointed again. The holocaust glow of his eyes so intense, teardrop trails shimmered horizontally from their corners.
You have interfered for the last time.
Oh, will you just shut up and kill me?
I raised the knife slightly, its claw-like finials prickling against my forearm, and felt the points slide into my skin. The sweet, rotting fruit smell of demon blood hung cloying in the air.
Am I bleeding?
I didn't care. I brought my sword down and around, a swordsman's move, hilt rotating in my hand as the blade spun like a propeller. He leapt for me again. Bones snapped in my side, the agony immense and useless like everything else. Stars of pain shattering across the surface of my mind, I brought the knife up in a sweep and felt the blade bite. A feedback squeal grinding the rubble around us into dancing, cascading dust, and the knife wrenched from my grasp, clawed my hand desperately before flying in a high, impossible arc, up and away, the power feeding up my arm jolting to a stop as Lucifer backhanded me, smashing me to the ground. Rolling.
Get up, get up, get up!
I was on my feet, one last desperate lunge, sword blade screaming as it split air and twisted, driving home in the devil's chest. A spike of fire jabbed through my left lung, blood dribbling down my chin, muscles pulled out of alignment by smashed bones. I swayed on my numb feet and saw what I had done. We stood like that. Lucifer pinned like a butterfly. The devil, black blood griming his ivory teeth and his eyes inches from mine, smiled. The world halted.
That's not gonna kill him.
I watched his hand come up, claws springing free.
This is going to hurt.
I shifted my weight to pull Fudoshin free.
I will never be able to cut him a second time. I dropped the knife. I'm dead.
I tore my blade free. Power rayed out from the event we had just created in spiderwebs of force and reaction, rubble grinding to smaller bits and dust pluming, shaping into mushroom clouds. Everything inside me rose and halted, hanging in the air above my skin. My left shoulder burned, a prickling mass of hot ice and barbed wire flooding me with a desperate burst of power. Straining through me, trying to shield me against the inevitable, flexible demon-altered bones crackled, and the relief and weightlessness I had felt falling through the roof of Paradise wrapped around me again.
It's over.
Lucifer's hand began its descent, claws sparkling with emerald flame to match the gem in his forehead. His face was a mask of unholy rage, psychic darkness flooding under its beauty, and my heart stuttered as the essential inhumanity of the thing I saw beneath that screen of loveliness was revealed. And I recognized it. I recognized the twisted teeth and burning eyes. I heard its echo in my own brain. It was my own hatred.
How much more like the devil am I going to have to become to kill him? No. I will not be like you.
No.
The only word I could say repeated.
No.
Gathering force in my eyes
no.
and arms and lips filling me.
No.
It was the only prayer
no.
I could utter.
No!
Dante, you have been so blind.
Compassion is not your strongest virtue, Daniel-san.
How had my teacher known?
The red ribbon of rage in my head paled. It shrank to a thread-thin line. I did not want it to go. It was my only defense. I could not help what had been done to me, but I could fight. I could kill. Couldn't I?
I can't hold a gun to your head and make you more human.
The dead rose about me, each of them a distinct shape of silver lattice and crystalline intent, holding an imprint of the flesh they wore in my life. Louis, with his smile and his steadfast love. Doreen, with her gentleness. Jace, with his stubborn refusal to give in. Gabe, who had known me better than I knew myself. And Eddie, always on the periphery, but still necessary, who would have done for me what I did for him and not counted the cost. All of them rose in me, a tide of love and obligation, the nets of duty and the lines of promises made, kept, broken, and kept again, the dead keened in my bones, spilled through my blood and blazed through me as the red thread inside my head opened its jaws and roared. Has a god ever used you to complete a circle? Have you ever been ridden by a Loa? A Vodun shaman will understand. The god or spirit spills into you, stretching you like a too small glove on a hand, and the thin ecstasy of a bursting, too ripe fruit shatters whatever you thought you were. Infinity recognizes you. And how can you help but recognize the infinity in your own soul? My God woke in me, his slim canine head turning to look with its terrible eyes that became my eyes. For a dizzying moment, death filled me.
Compassion is not your strongest virtue.
Yes, it is. Gods grant I do not forget it. They did not.
Sekhmet woke. She took a single step, a stamping dance that would unmake the world, moving on, creation flooding in its wake. It was and was not me who did the striking. At the last, it was them.
No, it's me too. I swear it is.
I struck. Not with my sword. If I tried to cut with Fudoshin again, it would be in rage. In anger. I already knew how useless that would be. Fury turning back on itself. Destruction for its own sake. The force boiled out of me. My hand spread instead of locked in a fist. I touched the devil's face, cupping his cheek as if he were a lover. My fingers gentle and delicate, the silk of an impermeable, invulnerable skin sending a heatless pang through me. The scream was the world stopping. It was a death cry, or the cry of love like a knife to the heart. The god I thought had abandoned me gathered me to his chest, comfort singing through my sobbing, broken body. It was not Anubis who had turned away. It was me. He had never left me for a moment. "You may not take this," Anubis Sekhmet said. "This is mine. And you may not have her." Ash threaded through Lucifer's skin. The even gold and bright light dimmed by spreading veins of dusty, dirty gray. My other hand came up, met his face. His emerald cracked, sending out one vicious, caustic flash. Suddenly, a dripping point speared free of Lucifer's ribs, and over the devil's shoulders, a pair of yellow eyes dawned, meeting mine with a blow no less critical than the one I had just meted out. Lucas twisted the knife. The flesh under my fingers collapsed, runnels of dry decay replicating furiously. The twin pieces of Lucifer's emerald ground themselves into dust. I could hear the satisfaction in the knife's chill voice. The explosion of dusty diamond grit blew my hair back, scouring my eyes and filling my mouth with dry sand. I stumbled back, my legs failing me. Someone caught me, breaking the force of my fall. My fingers spasmed open, my sword dropped. Power slid through the mark on my shoulder, detonated inside my bones, and Jathomel folded himself over me. He said something I could not quite hear. It might have been my name. It could have been anything. My head tilted back, stars scoring the sky through veils of dust. The ground tilted. Pain like a diamond nail was driven through me from crown to soles. My body struggled against it, a fish on a hook. I convulsed. Footsteps brushed a slope of wreckage, picking their way delicately down. Jaffermel's arms tightened. He pulled me once more into the shelter of his body. My cheek burned. The emerald grafted into the bone, red hot.
"The prince is dead. Long live the prince."
"It is the way of our kind, is it not?"
Demons drew close. The smell of burning cinnamon turned cloying, dust decay threading its sweet muskiness. Eve's smell, baking bread, vulnerability, pure sweetness, rose in my nose, slid down the back of my throat.
"Come any closer, and I'll make you eat this thing."
"Give me the knife. It's what you were contracted for."
"Funny thing about that. I ain't never welched on a contract before. All three of you trying to hire me away from each other, and all for a simple goddamn assassination."
"I was just trying to stay alive, Lucas."
The thought was clean, the shock of a god's touch falling away from my mind. The blank spot in my memory receded.
Lucas, give me the knife.
It ain't yours. Neither am I.
Something nudged my shoulder.
Here, chica. You'd best hold this.
Cold fingers touched mine. Something obscenely warm touched my palm. Feverish energy jolting up my wrist, slamming into my elbow and sucking into my shoulder before spreading down through my healing bones. I tried to open my eyes. They obeyed. Slowly, a slice of blurry light danced in front of me.
What the hell just happened?
My vision cleared. Lucas stood, threadbare and slump-shouldered, an unholstered 60-watt plas gun pointed at the ice-haired demon who stood, her emerald glowing. The knife sang in my hand. Jeffermel kissed my forehead.
Merely breathe, Hedera. All is well.
I hired you first. Don't make an enemy out of me, Deathless. You won't like the results.
He leveled the plas gun. Yellow eyes narrowed.
I think you'd better get the fuck out of here, Blue Eyes. I already killed one demon today, and I might take it in mind to kill another. Besides, ain't you got some trouble back home to take care of?
She shrugged. The movement was so uncannily like Lucifer as my heart jolted in my chest.
It makes little difference anyway.
My voice wouldn't work properly. I finally managed to wrap my lips around a single syllable. Eve. Her eyes slid away from Lucas, traveled over acres of burning air to look at me. Around the rim of the rubble bowl, the paired lamps of demon eyes were winking out.
Show's over, folks. Nothing left to see here. Move along.
Goodbye, Dante. Thank you for your help.
Her smile was the plastic grimace of a child's doll.
Though you were wrong.
About what?
My throat was stoppered with dry dust. I could only stare, accusingly, from the shelter of Jaframel's arms. His fingers closed around mine, sliding under the knife's finials, his lips against my filthy hair.
Any key will do in a lock, with enough coaxing.
Eve's gaze lingered on the knife for a few moments. A calculation crossed her face, and another.
Is she thinking how easy it might be to set me barking up another tree?
I had been so blind. Jaframel raised his face from my hair.
This stays with me, Androgyne.
One day, I might come to reclaim it.
The gas flame glow of her eyes dimmed slightly, a new color blooming underneath the screen of light. Green. Like sunlight through new leaves. Like a laser. Like Lucifer's gaze. Jaframel's hand was warm and steady, holding my fingers against a silken hilt of wood and grief.
On that day, you will meet his fate. Rule hell if you will, I care little. But us, you will leave in peace.
I found I could breathe again.
Eve.
I struggled to sit up, to shake free of Jaframel's arms.
What's happening to her?
My daughter tilted her head slightly as the last shades of blue died out of her eyes. She was unmistakably female, the sheerness of her beauty maturing in breathtaking leaps, her face thinning a little, and the gold of her skin flushing warmly.
Is it another glamour? No. This change is something else. Something deeper.
Any pretense she might have made at humanity was now laid aside, and I found myself lying under the hard, brilliant sky of the Vegas waste and watching something inhuman settle into its newest form.
The prince is dead. Long live the prince.
She turned away, her supple back under the torn, dust-smeared sweater, shining with its own grace.
My thanks for your aid, my friends. But now I have a whole world to conquer.
May it give you joy.
But she was already gone, vanishing between one breath and the next. For a few moments, he held me, while the dust settled, silence returning and filling the amphitheater like liquid in a cup.
It's over. I'm still alive.
But I had failed in every way that ever counted. There was another hover, a long, sleek new craft with a battery of mage and deep-scan shielding that resolved out of the desert sky, landing with a bump and opening its side hatch like a flower. I didn't question it, even when Tianz greeted us all with a cheery smile that showed the tips of his abnormally long canines. Anton Kagumbi, his head bandaged, didn't even look up from strapping down cargo containers. Van looked a little worse for wear, bruised and battered and moving slowly as he brought out a blanket that Jaff wrapped around me before handing me and the knife over to McKinley. I felt nothing except a numb wonder that they had all survived. All except Leander, that is. The numbness even covered that with a sheet of plasticine wrap, insulating me from the bite of guilt. It was McKinley, oddly enough, who brought me up to speed on the long twilight journey back from the waste. Him and the Hollow News, because Jaframel wouldn't speak to me, and neither would Lucas. The incidences of Magi dying had tapered off a little. The hegemony directive was rescinded and everyone got back to work. There were still problems, of course. Plenty of demons had escaped hell and would have to be dragged back kicking and screaming. But that was a job for the new head honcho. The brand new Prince of Hell. The leader of the successful rebellion. Eve. Or, more properly, Aldaramel. The Morning Star. Lucifer's youngest and most favored consort. The new toy he'd brought back to hell. Reverse-engineered from Doreen, a human descendant of the Fallen, and his own genetic material. Was it narcissism? Or was the devil just like a human with a new love affair? In any case, she'd gotten just what she wanted. The Prince of Hell was dead. Long live the Prince. Hello? I said to the silence inside myself. Hello? The Hollow News was salt in the wound. Picture after picture of shattered houses, Magi gone missing, weird occurrences all over the world as the jostling factions from hell fought it out. I had watched the flickering pictures through a heavy blanket of water, clear exhaustion, refusing to close my eyes, refusing to look away. They compared it to the chaos at the time of the Great Awakening, and expert hollow heads weighed in with utterly useless analyses.
Here.
McKinley handed me a thick china mug. It smelled like coffee, and I slumped in an ergonomic chair bolted to the floor with the blanket pulled tight around me, staring fixedly at the dark liquid.
You should drink.
Why? I pushed away a curtain of weariness and tried to take a drink. My stomach closed, tighter than a fist. He shrugged, rubbing at his metallic left hand. His fingers left no smudge behind on the smooth, gleaming, almost skin.
It's over. At least for now.
What? You're expecting more?
I set the cup down on a slice of table snugged into the chair's side. What happens now?
Now we pick up the pieces.
He tilted his head slightly, indicating the front of the hover. Jaframel in whispered conference with Van and Tianz. Kagumbi, slumped asleep in a fold-out chair bolted to the hull. Lucas, leaning on the hull at the periphery of that conversation, his yellow eyes trained on me. I swallowed hard. The hover bounced a little, the AI piloting since Tianz was now leaning closer to Jaff, making some earnest point. The Nichtwren's gaze flicked to me and away, and he brought one fist softly into the palm of his other hand for emphasis. My sword lay across my knees, the metal quiescent and shining only as much as ordinary steel. It had rammed through Lucifer's chest and still remained intact. The knife lay on the table, its slow subsonic song of grief and rage sounding more and more foreign. My eyes closed. I drifted, my fingers and toes gone cold and rubbery. The broken places inside my head shivered, too tired to even try knitting together. For a long time, I rocked like that, my head lolling against the back of the seat, the bumps and jostles of the hover a cradle's soft movement. Someone touched my dirty dust-caked hair. The fingers were gentle, and I opened my eyes to see Jaff standing over me, his face drawn and thoughtful. My left shoulder twitched as if a fishhook in the flesh had been pulled.
Can you stand?
You might as well ask if I can fly.
I grabbed the arms of the chair, braced myself, tensed, and managed to push myself up, my right hand scooping up Fudoshin's hilt. Jaframel steadied me with one hand, picked up the knife with the other, using only his fingertips and wincing slightly.
I shall have Van make another sheath for this.
You keep it. I don't want it.
I'd say give it to Lucas, but I don't know if he wants it either.
Jaframel paused. He glanced over his shoulder. Lucas had closed his eyes, leaning against the hull and listening while McKinley said something to Tianz. The Nichtwren casting a dubious look at me.
I don't care anymore.
Jaff's hand fell away from my arm. Where are we going?
I thought you might prefer a bed, such as it is.
His eyes caught fire, but his face was merely set and thoughtful.
Dante.
I set my jaw.
A bed. Just one more thing and I can sleep for a week. That'd be nice.
Jaframel.
Then I can start untangling the rest of this mess. All those things I swore I'd do once I finished. All those promises I made.
The pain wouldn't go away. It was right under my ribs. My heart caught in a nest of splinters.
All my friends are dead. And so is the devil. Why don't I feel any better?
The hover bounced. McKinley finished what he was saying. They turned and stared.
All eyes on you, Danny. Do something.
I took an experimental step, swayed, but I waved Jaframel's hand away.
I'll make it to the bed on my own, goddammit.
One thing at a time.
Why don't I feel better?
Tears rose in my throat, prickled behind my eyes.
Why?
Valentine!
I tensed and waited.
The hand that can hold the knife has faced fire and not been consumed. Has walked in death and returned. A hand given strength beyond its ken.
Had there truly been a prophecy? Or was it just absurdity? He was the deathless, but Eve had thought I was the key.
Was I? Will I ever know?
We even?
Even? How the hell can we be even? I tried to kill you. You were working for everyone except me, but you killed Lucifer. And you gave me back the knife. Even doesn't happen in this kind of a situation.
An exotic thought stopped me. I considered it in my exhaustion-fogged state. Thought about it for a long while.
Valentine, are we even?
Is Lucas Villalobos asking if we're still friends?
I never thought I'd live to see the day.
It doesn't matter. Nothing matters now. If I can live without knowing some things, I can live with calling Lucas Villalobos something other than an enemy.
We're still friends, Lucas. If that's what you're asking. Nobody moved. I barely even breathed.
Good enough. Get some rest.
Not all your friends are dead, Danny.
I followed the hem of Jaffermel's coat, stumbling with exhaustion and clutching Futoshin's hilt. When the door closed behind us and he took me in his arms, I found tears running hot and thick down my cheeks. For once that didn't matter either. Where are we going?
Santiago City, Dante. Your home. Ours now.
The city lies under its pall of orange light and fog. Sheets of white coming up from the bay. It pulses from the depths of the tank to the spires of downtown, the financial district to the suburbs. Against the skyline, lines of hover traffic slide between buildings in patterns almost random enough to practice divination with. You can spend a whole night up here. The curtains pulled back and the bulletproof plas glass dialed to maximum transparency. The entire room dark except for the red eye of the nursery monitor. Each night, the sound of human breathing soothes me. A child's deep, trustful sleep in a room guarded by two agents. They take turns at her door. In our house, a little human girl sleeps. She does not ask anymore when her mother is coming back. I know better than to think she's forgotten the question. She has Eddie's golden curls and Gabe's wide dark eyes and dimples when she smiles. Oddly enough, it's the demon she likes best. He is endlessly patient with her. Willing to spend hours reading brightly colored primary books or playing small games designed to teach her how to control her gifts. Of course, she is a child of scions, and testing at birth returned a Matheson score almost as high as mine. Her mother's will is explicit. I'm named as guardian and trustee. Gabe, with her inherent precision, reaching from beyond the grave to hold me to my promise. Love and obligation, the net that holds me here, all boiled down to a child's laugh and scattered toys.
Did I break the other promises so I could keep this one? Do I want to know if I did?
Jaff says,
"Tell me what you want."
And each time I shake my head. I take my sword into the long, dimly lit practice room. Its wooden floor smells of workouts, and its mirrored wall reflects a body I no longer have to strain to control. The katas my teacher first taught me unfold, each movement precise and restrained. Sometimes that control breaks, and the blackness infecting my mind leaks out. It is most often at night, and I will resurface to find myself in his arms, my throat aching with unshed screams and my body tense, stiff and wooden with the strain of holding it back. If I can't, if it escapes me and I struggle, there is another net to hold me above the abyss. It is the net of a demon's arms, his hand cupping my skull to keep me from battering it to pieces. The grip he keeps on my wrists, so I cannot claw my own eyes out. We do not speak those nights. I cannot stand the sound of another voice. The net of human and financial assets available to demons on Earth is strangling in its own blood. The only ones safe from vengeance and chaos are vassals of another demon, one the new prince does not control. They hear the whispers and pass them on, safe in their scrupulous neutrality. Kagumbi visits each month with a report, and each time he studies me as if I am the answer to a question never asked. Hell has never been quiet. Lucifer ruled with fear and iron discipline, torture and trickery. Ousting him from his throne was the easy part. Now the new prince must solidify her grip on power. She is young, and there are older and mightier among the Greater Flight. There are also those who might not believe Lucifer is quite dead. He was, after all, the prime, the alpha of demonkind, if not the omega. The whispers are mounting. Magi have never found it so easy to break the walls between our world and hell. It's a renaissance in their branch of magic, and precious few are looking for a sting in the tail of the gift. Those who question its provenance are told they don't have to participate. Scions are uneasy, and violent attacks on those with power are at an all-time high. If it's a chemical reaction, it's nowhere near finished yet. Even the cure for Chlormine 13, that great drug blight of our time, hasn't helped. There are new drugs, and rumors of a high better than any drug. A high available for a price. From new sources. Inhuman sources. There's one more thing. The urn sits on the mantelpiece, over the Nivron fire I never turn on. In the bedroom where I sit at night and watch the city glow. It's black and wetly lacquered, a beautiful, restrained demon artifact. It is full of cinnamon-scented ash. Jaframel and I do not speak of it. The broken places inside my head are healing, slowly. I have not spoken to a god since the moment of spillskin ecstasy when they filled me, denying me, body and soul, from a demon's grasp. I can't call my faith lost precisely. It's just quiet, dormant. If it ever wakes, I'll light my candles and speak to my god again. I think he, of all creatures, understands. On the other end of the mantle, set on a twisting stand of glass, a knife of silken wood and grief hums sleepily to itself. Its point spears toward the urn, and sometimes it quivers a bit, as if sensing.
But that's impossible, isn't it? Lucifer was not fallen. A fallen's dormancy doesn't apply to him, does it?
It matters little. The knife was made to kill demons, no matter how powerful. While we hold it, the weapon guarantees us some safety. If the new prince manages to hold hell, we're safe.
Or are we?
Plot, counterplot, lies and agendas. If the new prince doesn't hold hell in check, what might happen? The walls between their world and ours grow thinner every day. And sometimes, when he thinks I'm not looking, my fallen's face holds a familiar expression, listening for a sound I can't hear, ready for a threat I can't imagine. A knife and an urn full of ash. Right now, the knife is insurance, and the urn is...
What? A token? A memento?
Tomorrow, they might be bargaining chips in a new game, and I have a daughter to keep safe now. A promise I will keep, even if it means playing their games again. I'll be better at it next time. Much better. I wait and watch, and raise my best friend's daughter. Already there's an idea growing in the back of my mind. A little tickle of precognition. A plan I might have to put in play. Whoever occupies the throne of hell, I hope they have sense enough to leave us alone. Because if they don't, all hell will break loose. That's a promise I'll have no trouble keeping. We'll be right back.
Dante Valentine, Book 5, To Hell and Back, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2008, Lilith St. Croix. Published by arrangement with Hachette Book Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, David Coyne, Yasmin Toison, Joseph Thornhill, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Terrence Aselford, Joe Brack, Thomas Keegan, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Dan Stevens, Stephen Carpenter, and Johann Detweiler. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Johann Detweiler and Rose Elizabeth Supan. Graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Rose Elizabeth Supan. If you enjoyed To Hell and Back, be sure to look for E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth Saga and Brent Week's Night Angel Trilogy. Both available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Graphic Audio presents Peter V. Brett's fantasy masterpiece, The Demon Cycle. Book 1, The Warded Man. Experience a world filled with hardship and pain. By day, humanity struggles to carve out an existence in a land that wants nothing more than to see it fall. By night, the broken rabble cowers behind magical wards, its only protection from the relentless bloodthirst of the demon plague. But just as the light threatens to fade away forever, and shadow is poised to shroud all in its wake, three survivors will band together to do battle with the savage horde. Led by a mysterious, fearsome warrior known only as the Warded Man, humanity will wage a bloody war against the creatures of the night. A war that could bring it to the very brink of destruction, or capture its final salvation. Don't miss the savage action of The Warded Man, Parts 1 and 2. Coming soon in graphic audio.
Don't do this, Red Man. Don't. Don't!
The spirits told me to do this. Are you ready? Ready for the unity of our power?
Let her up.
Oh. I will have to kill you someday, Windrunner. Whatever I have to do, I will have White Ash.
Listen. You're destined for greatness. Go north. Find the Dreamer. Promise. Promise!
I promise.
Windrunner?
I'm leaving tomorrow.
Leaving?
I can go to the Black Point, earn a place among them, and when I do, I can ask you to marry me.
That's crazy!
Do you love me?
Yes.
I'll be back for you.
Bad Belly, man of the people.
Who are you?
I am First Man, the Wolf Dreamer.
Go away! Leave me alone! I've done nothing!
The Sun People come. The spiral is changing. Are you willing to fulfill a promise to power?
Oh.
No. No, this can't be. There are too many. What are you gonna do with me?
What does any man want with a woman?
No!
I only came back to steal White Ash away. Now I have to find her.
Be careful.
I know. Is White Ash with Windrunner?
No. Wolf people.
If I have to destroy every man, woman, and child among the wolf people, I'll have her.
North America's Forgotten Past. Book 3. People of the Earth. In graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.